Hi folks, Joyce here. Here's a recording of my latest note for Cafe Insiders. Hopefully Rittenhouse won't be free as f*** for long. As always, write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. Dear listener, there was a lot not to like about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. There's been much outrage, rightfully, about the behavior of Kenosha County Judge Bruce Schroeder during the trial. But while Judge Schroeder's conduct and apparent bias has given the public reason to doubt the fairness of the trial, he's not the only one at fault. Throughout the trial, the prosecution has made tactical missteps. Prosecutors have to be able to deal with all kinds of behavior from judges at trial because they can't appeal from a jury's acquittal of a defendant. Whether evidence and testimony are excluded rightly or wrongly, prosecutors have to be able to present their case using the evidence that has been admitted at trial. And it's not always to the prosecution's disadvantage when evidence is excluded. For example, if the judge had allowed the prosecution to introduce evidence that Rittenhouse, following his release on bond, had hung out with members of the white nationalist Proud Boys wearing a shirt that said "Free as F," they'd be laying the groundwork for Rittenhouse to have a strong avenue to appeal. While that behavior is clearly abhorrent, it has little relevance to the charges brought against Rittenhouse and could inflame the jury to make a decision based on emotion rather than fact. If such evidence, what's called unfairly prejudicial evidence, had been introduced, it could have led to a reversal of conviction on appeal. That the prosecutors sought to introduce this evidence knowing that it could create issues on appeal was a strategic error. Successfully prosecuting a case requires sticking to the evidence that's essential to securing a conviction and avoiding evidence that could prove unnecessarily problematic. The moments from the trial that have drawn the most public attention have been the ones in which the judge lost his temper and yelled at prosecutors. But these came after prosecutors made significant mistakes that would have drawn rebuke from any judge. The first came when a prosecutor referenced the fact that Rittenhouse didn't make a statement to law enforcement after his arrest. I was driving when I heard the prosecutor's question, and I nearly wrecked my car. The Fifth Amendment protects a defendant's right to silence. Commenting on it is a near guarantee of mistrial because of the importance of protecting that right. The judge was correct to seriously admonish the prosecution. The only reason we won't see a mistrial in this case is because the defense seems to believe the trial is going well. They'd only want a mistrial with prejudice, meaning Rittenhouse can't be tried again, which they're unlikely to get. The second outburst came when a prosecutor tried to introduce evidence of Rittenhouse's statement several weeks in advance of the killings at issue in the trial, where he can be heard on video saying, quote, "Bro, I wish I had my effing AR," close quote, so that he could, quote, "start shooting rounds at shoplifters." This evidence was previously excluded by the judge in a pretrial order. Regardless of whether that decision was correct, violating a court's order in this regard is something every attorney knows will draw the court's wrath and possibly even contempt. If the prosecution believed Rittenhouse's testimony had opened the door to that evidence and that the court should revisit its earlier ruling, the proper approach was to go to the judge first to explain and ask for a ruling. Every trial lawyer knows this, especially an experienced prosecutor. And the fact that this was done in the presence of the jury is so inflammatory that the suggestions that the prosecution was trying for a mistrial on purpose because they thought the case was going badly weren't entirely specious. It's understandable that prosecutors were on their back foot after one of their key witnesses, a victim who survived being shot by Rittenhouse, testified to facts consistent with self-defense in that one shooting. But that was not the right way for prosecutors to recover their footing. The prosecution did regain its stride after this, continuing its cross-examination with key questions about Rittenhouse's conduct and intent and going through the events of the day with him to elicit testimony that undermined his claims of self-defense. This is what they should have led with, not a line of questioning that they knew was likely objectionable. Mistakes like these are unforced errors for the prosecution. They have good evidence in this case, likely enough to disassemble Rittenhouse's self-defense argument. There is enough inconsistency in his claims to permit the jury to reject his version of the facts. For instance, he says he brought his AR-15 style rifle along with him on a mission to provide medical assistance. Despite being forced to admit on cross-examination, he was not a certified EMT and lacked any medical qualifications. He also told the jury that he didn't understand how his Full Metal Jacket ammunition worked, a hard claim to believe from someone so intent on obtaining a firearm that he did it illegally while underage. As his credibility on one issue falls, it casts more doubt on his overall truthfulness. I certainly didn't believe him, and it's on the prosecution to ensure that by the end of the trial, neither does the jury. Trials in progress are always messy, even when they don't take place under a microscope like this one did. Homicide charges are especially difficult. Showing the defendant's state of mind or mens rea at the time they committed the killing is the key, but in a case like this one, there isn't direct evidence of what someone was thinking when they pulled the trigger, requiring prosecutors to rely on circumstantial evidence. Rittenhouse's self-defense argument adds further complications, requiring the prosecution to convince the jury that he didn't reasonably perceive an unprovoked risk of death or serious harm to himself or another, a legally and factually complicated issue. The prosecution knew the difficulties it faced going in, and it should have avoided playing games with the evidence, instead honing in on precisely what it needed to prove to secure a conviction. By the time you listen to this, the case will be in the jury's hands. There's no way of predicting the verdict or even if there will be one. If the jury can't reach a unanimous verdict, it results in what's known as a hung jury and then a new trial. If that happens, both the judge and the prosecution need to do better. If the judge can't conduct a trial free from the appearance of bias, which let's be honest, he likely can't, he should be replaced. For the prosecution's part, they can't make arguments or introduce evidence that undermines the constitutional protections afforded to even the most reprehensible defendants. It's up to prosecutors to play by the rules and win a conviction fairly and squarely on the evidence. Stay informed. Joyce.